Okay, good morning, everyone. Bruchim Habayim. I hope everybody is well. Shavua Tov, Agutvach. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. It's great to have you back this morning. We are privileged and excited to have just an incredibly important group of guests who are joining us here in Chicago this morning. And we are especially grateful to our first guest coming to us live from the Bronx, from Riverdale in New York City, Rav Mordechai Willig Shlita. For those who don't know, Rav Willig serves as a Rosh Kola, Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elkanan at Reitz, as well as the rabbi of the Young Israel of Riverdale. Rabbi Willig has been one of the preeminent poskim who has been guiding not just the New York American, but worldwide Jewish community in dealing with issues that have arisen in light of coronavirus. And first of all, we have so much hakaras hatov, Rabbi, for the amount of investment that you have made in Klal Yisrael. For those who don't know, Rabbi Willig is a dayan on the RCA Beis Din. And Rabbi Willig has seen many shilohs over the years, I suspect, in over 40 years in the Rabbanos as a Rav, as a Mora Derech, and a Posek. But this period, this Tekufa, has been, I would say, probably unusual. So maybe, Rabbi, maybe you want to begin by just giving us some insight into some of the extraordinary questions that you've been dealing with. For those who have not seen, Rabbi Willig has been involved in delivering Piske Halacha and guidance. I'm envisioning an iconic picture of Rabbi reading the Megillah outside of somebody's apartment, and then on the guitar, you know, giving chizuk and piskeis and everything. So thank you for everything. And maybe, Rabbi, just to start us off with some, just a world perspective into what's going on from your perspective.
Thank you, Rabbi Brand, for your exaggerations. I'm very happy to tell the listening audience that it is true that our yeshiva has asked me to give what they call a chizuk on Fridays before Shabbos and partner with various personalities. And one of them was Rabbi Brand himself. He was the only one who also played the guitar. The other ones just spoke. So thank God your Rabbi Brand is not only an excellent speaker, but a good singer and player as well. I'm not a coffee drinker, but I'm happy to partake in your coffee room this Sunday morning. I want to tell you that perhaps the most significant new development in my life over this whole crisis is the Zoom that we're on right now. I didn't know what really Zoom really was till now, but ever since we closed, and we closed early on, I'm on Zooming. And I'd like to talk about that that first chapter, perhaps most important of all. I'll give you some background. Here in New York, which as you know has been the epicenter of Corona, things developed in interesting fashion. I'll speak personally because just give you an idea of how it affected me. On March 2nd, it was a Monday, my wife and I took off on a plane to Israel for bar mitzvah of a grandson. That Shabbos. Things developed. We came back the next Sunday morning, early in the morning. It was March 8th, the day before Tas Esther. And all of a sudden, everything's falling apart. You are right. Correct. That very night, what happens, the day we left on a Monday night, Tuesday, New Rochelle blew up with a spreader. It was terrible. And that affected people directly because many of these New Rochelle kids studying SAR, they closed that very day, that Tuesday. Closed. I came back Sunday, and the world is starting to unravel. But I didn't realize how bad it was. They told me that people in quarantine, so I landed in the field twice that night in two different apartments. I was in the hall, someone was inside, someone was behind me. Whatever, it was a complicated story. The next day was Purim. I put a big sign on the shul. You must follow the following regulations, which I received from my Talmud, Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glatt, who has become internationally known because of his leadership role in this particular issue. This was on earlier in the week. That Monday, Tanis Esther received a phone call. It was my last day in NYU. It was that Monday. She was already closed. I was there for a bris and a Torah and a Bashir. a woman from the shul says, Rabbi, close the shul. Said, close the shul? The government hasn't told us to close the shul. It says, I'm thinking about to close the shul. This is Monday, time says. So we had the Megillah, you know, Monday night, and we had it Tuesday. People came to my house Tuesday, as they always do, Purim. It was a little smaller crowd than usual, but people in and out all day long. I went, my last visit was to my daughter's house for the Suda. Since then, my wife and I eat table two, every single, that's, no one's coming to my house. That's it, it's finished. So that Wednesday, late at night, the RCBC closed all shuls. Based upon the doctors in Bergen County said, if you don't close the shuls, the health system is going to be overwhelmed. The emergency rooms, the ICUs, they closed the shul. I heard about it after midnight. I said, let me check it out. So I called Dr. Reichman from the, Eddie Reichman from the Miami area. He says, no, we're not overwhelmed. You don't have to close. Good. That was Thursday morning. Thursday night was Zoom conference. Rabbi Shechter Shlita, myself, Rabbi David Cohen was on for a while. Shouldn't be closed. Back, forth. Yes, no. Dr. Glatt said, I don't think you have to close right now. So we decided not to close. The very next morning, the last time in my shul was a bris that morning, Friday morning. As a message from Dr. Glatt. I called him up. Close. What changed? He was in shul that morning. Young Israel over here. People walking in coughing. The first rule was, you're coughing, you're sneezing, don't come. People cannot keep the rules. In addition, he had a case in his hospital, the first case. So I said, closed. We closed that day. I got complaints originally why we did not close. Got very vivid rabbinic complaints why we did close. That same day, that Friday. We have a doctor in our shul who's the head of medicine in Westchester. Eddie said, the decision to close saved many lives. We closed, many other shuls closed. And because they closed their shuls, as opposed to other communities where he was servicing, lives. So if you ask me, the most important decision of all was the first decision, to close immediately, because that's what saved lives. That's what I wanted to share with you.
Wow, mine was unbelievable. So as Rabbi said, as these issues unfolded, so then you had Shilas, Pesach Shilas, and all kinds of things. So Rabbi spoke about the conference calls. How many of these calls keep going, like with Rav Shechter? Well, what's going on over there?
Well, I'll tell you two things. Number one, perhaps one of the weightiest questions was the flip side. You are aware that the OU and Aguda sent out a joint message to close all the shuls shortly after that. I was on a conference call with many doctors that the OU, Rabbi Howard Shlita, should give us a tremendous amount of credit, convened a group of doctors, and they told us what to do. This is the Sunday. The next day, we closed on Friday, is that Sunday, 2 days later. And they were back and forth. The Aguda had their own group of doctors. Dr. Glatt was on both groups, OU and the Aguda, back and forth. Then the question was reopening. That's when it was the parting of the ways. OU said, Aguda said, the governor says to open, we open. OU wanted a two weeks to see, make sure they're safe. In this conference with Rabbi Shechter and Rabbi Usher Weiss Shlita on a Zoom, should we count the 2 weeks as originally intended from the time the governor said open? Or since the curve had flattened 10 days before that, should we say, well, we should really count retroactively from the, we would open the shoes 10 days earlier? And there was a lot of pressure because, you know, one of the good shoes opened up, the OU shoes still closed. It was not so simple. The same neighborhood, you probably have in Chicago, the same thing. And I was sitting there with the weight of the world on my shoulders. What are we going to do? Rabbi Glatt said it's safe to open. Rabbi Howard said, we shouldn't. I felt that way. I have to make a decision. What moved me was not just the mere fact that what we're doing in our presence, but it would affect the whole country. I received a call from Chicago and from LA. Subsequently, we held the line. We kept it off close for two more solid weeks. That it helped the Rabbanim in Chicago and LA, not much their names, prominent Rabbanim, to hold the line. Because had we changed it, it would have been much harder. That was a very difficult decision. But I think in retrospect, it was the right decision. And by the way, if I was listening, I still do not go to shul. Because the original guideline said, if you're over 65, I confess that I am. You know, it's better to stay home. So far, I'm still staying home. We reopen our shul on Thursday, 2 weeks was minyanim is supposed to be 10. You know, it's eivshel at some time. People walk in after the 10, but they try to limit it to 10. Fine. The Pesach Shilas, there were many people wanted to have Zoom Siddurim on Pesach. I said, absolutely not. Not a chance. Not a chance. Because you have to be careful. It was Pikuach Nefesh. If it's Pikuach Nefesh, of course, it's okay, but usually it's not Pikuach Nefesh. And you have to have very broad definitions. We've had many, many Shilas in which I'll give it one example. A Shilas came from, some of these questions came through my bi-weekly Young Israel National Council of Israel Rabbis Conference, which is cool. And many came from Rabbi Tarig and Rabbi Reuven Tarig and Shtita. Has a whole bunch of questions. I'll just say one of them. A woman writes from South Africa, curfew, closed at night. Closed. That happened in New York for the last few nights. Closed in New York is for other reasons, we closed at night. So some woman felt she wanted to go early. We did in New York. Go late, which is what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. You can't go out of night because of listim. We had listim in our town. I think you had a few in your town too. So you go there later. But some woman said, you know, she feels that maybe for certain fertility issues, maybe it would be better if she went earlier. So I responded that if she had a particular protocol, she was taking medicine, and she had to go earlier, we would certainly allow it. Even by us, when we refused to open, one woman had to go on time. I sent her to a neighboring community, and they got special permission to let her in. But other than that, just she's worried, not enough. Then I added as follows. If you look in the Rabbi Avadi Yosef's Taras Abayis, he quotes it from the Netziv, that even if it intrinsically would be permissible, you have to be very careful, it shouldn't be a kilkul or rabbin, because people have an attitude that if something is permissible in one extreme circumstance, they'll extrapolate to all circumstances. It's one unique view, a minority opinion you rely upon in an emergency. Right away, you do it all the time. I don't want to go into what's going on in the rabbinical world today. Rabbi knows exactly what I'm referring to without mentioning it. It became a certain people. That's where they go. We found one reason. We found one opinion. We found emergency, and they extrapolate. We have to fight against that. So I was very careful there. But just an example of what's going on. The calls coming all the time. All the numbers of shadows are. But Tara, can you do a Tara? Do you have to need a minion for a Kvura? These are weddings. I was ready to do a wedding with a total of 7 people, 4 men and 3 women. That's it, just a rabbi, a witness. And the caller was so afraid she chickened out even of that. Even that she didn't want to do. So we did the wedding with 10 people in the front yard 2 months later. It was more than 10, but that time in Jersey, I lifted the regulations so much. There are many questions that can make a brach shatarani on a Zoom. So the rabbi said no, and I said yes. But Tom is not allowed to go into the details. We tried. I plan to name my first baby in 2 days from now at a bris, Zoom bris. The bris is down my block. I'm not going. I can name it from here. Put me on Zoom.
That's right.
Give examples. Wow.
Thank you, Rebbe. So maybe we could shift back to something Rebbe mentioned earlier about the Erev Shabbos Chizuk. I know that in addition to dealing with the technical halachic issues, there's so many people, Nebuch, who, you know, whether they have themselves been affected by this makah, the family members, or people who are isolated, who are home. And so how has that turned out in terms of giving people chizuk?
So I've been on Zoom every day, 5 days a week, from Sunday to Thursday, since it began. We have cheer, mincha, you know, it's not a minyan, Avinu Malkeinu, 3 program of Tillim, and then another shear. From 6:30 to 7:30, I sometimes go a little bit later, but sometimes 6:30 and then 7:30 or a little bit later, not too much later. It's going on every single day. I pick a theme. First, we did it by Hilchos Pesach. We learned Pesach for the Tomid and Amud a day to make a siyum for Erev Pesach. Then we switch to Parsha Shavuot after Mincha and various things before Mincha. And then aside from the Torah and people, not from my own shul, people from New Jersey, people from 5 towns, they somehow found out about it, they got on. It's the musical chizuk, that's only once a week. That's Friday. Not the short one that I would do. It's a long one. I start at 5 o'clock, and we have chizuk for a half an hour or so. It's various themes. Then we have a mincha. Then we have a musical kalbach kabbalah shabbos. I never was a fan of all these things so much. but that's what people need. And I found out that they did it in Prague. They had musical Kabbalah Shabbos every week. I found out, so that's what I'm doing. And especially, you know, shachas you don't do, but a number of musical hallels. When it was regular hallel of Rosh Chodesh with my talis and tefillin, I could not put a guitar on my hand with my talis and tefillin. We just sang the hallel together. But Yom Matzvot, Yom Yerushalayim, when we did the hallel at the end, without talis and tefillin, then the guitar came out and there's all kinds of things. Because people chizuk. Everyone's job is to give people chizuk. That's our job. We have to help the people. I know my time is up. You told me 15 minutes. So let me end with this.
Yeah.
And my most recent Erek Shabbos chizuk, which, by the way, is petering out much fewer people because, thank God, the shul's already open now. But there were still over 50 people. You know, I can't have like three screens, you know. I ended my last one was in sort of a memory of Rabbi Lamb. I started with a niggun from Baruch Elokeinu that we sing at the Chag HaSmichus. Another niggun, the last niggun, I sang Nachamu. Nachamu Lashon Osos Nachum, Rabbi Nachum Lamb. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami. He's not talking to the people. He's talking to the Rabbanim, the Nevi'im at the time. Yom Alokeichem. It's our responsibility to give consolation and solace to people who are suffering. And if it means taking out a guitar, whatever it means, whatever it takes, saying a shir, chizuk, I give it very often a little brief morning WhatsApp message in the mornings just to give chizuk. That's our job, to help people out halachically, chizuk-wise. We hope and pray that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he should bring a quick end to this crisis and all those who were sick, and there are many people still sick, as we well know, throughout the country and the world, should have a refush shalema. And somehow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same as he brought it on us suddenly, should take it away from us suddenly, whether it be a vaccine or any other way, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if he to do it in a split second, we pray for that day, and ultimately pray for the Gula Shabbat here. Amen. Thank you for letting me join you in your coffee room.
Amen. Thank you so much, Rabbi. Thank you for the chizuk, and just listening to your orientation is mechazik all of us to be positive during this time and to pay it forward, to be mechazik other people. So you should be gesund. Good health to you, to the Rebbetzin. And whenever you get back to shul, I'm sure it'll be geschmack. But even in the meantime, you should just keep being mechazik all of us, the Balabatim in Riverdale and YU and the whole world. So thank you, Rebbe. Be well. Have a great week. A Shavua Tov.
You too. Kol Tov.
Thank you, Rebbe. Kol Tov. Be well.
Bye.
Bye. We thank Rabbi Willig for taking the time with us, and we welcome Rabbi Shalom Fishbane. Shalom Aleichem. Bruchim Abayim. Are you home now or you're in the office? Where are you now?
I'm home.
Okay, so for those who don't know, Rabbi Shalom Fishbane, who is the architect and the Daddy, can you please help me? Did you hear that? I can't at the moment, but maybe one of your siblings can. This is part of the challenge of the Zoom life at home. Rabbi Fishbane runs the CRC Kashrus division, which is an extraordinary and it's a huge enterprise. For those who don't know, if you haven't looked on a product lately, one of the top five of all the thousands and thousands of hechsherim, one of the top five hechsherim in the world. And Rabbi Fishbane is overseeing an enterprise that exists not just in Chicago, not just in the Midwest, around America, in China, and all over the place. And so, first of all, we thank you for enabling us to always eat everything we enjoy. And as a member of the CRC, I can tell you how much I personally benefited from the opportunities to work with Rabbi Fishbane in the Kollel, but just in general in the community. And one of the things that I was curious about, and I think many people are curious about, is how are you managing to continue to maintain the standards of kashrus, which at the CRC are platinum level kashrus, during a pandemic when there's so much challenge for travel and visits by mashgichim? And how is that affecting your ability to be mashgiach on all of the kashrus in this environment?
Well, thank you, and good morning to you. It's good to see you relaxed in your home setting. It's a great question, and you know, one of the things what we're blessed with is sometimes you have it's nasa yodei acherim. The government is the one that said essential workers, they get a pass, and our main message to all of our companies are we are essential workers. We take that approach whenever we call a company and say, as essential workers, we are coming in. Are there any restrictions we need to know about before we come in? We don't say, can we come in, but we are coming in. If they push back, that's when we go to Plan B, and we work with some of the technologies that are available to us. But I think that's the most important thing to understand, is that we labeled ourselves and truly believe we are essential workers because of food, and to some people keeping kosher, that's the only food they could eat, is they have to greet us and deal with us as such. Now, you know, the way Kashrus works in general is that we look at a company and we decide how many times it needs to be visited a year based on the complexity of the company. And, you know, it's math, but it's also dealing with mirsis and very much based in halacha. So if it's a very easy company, they're making sodium bicarbonate, for example, you almost don't have to go there. Or they're mining salt, you almost don't have to go there. So such places, we said to our mashgichim, you know what, hold off until the pandemic recedes. Other companies that are visited weekly, monthly, because of the type of companies, those are the ones that we've had to be innovated. If they're saying to us, please don't come in, we cannot handle it. I will tell you, in the United States, it's much easier. Overseas, it's much harder. And especially in Asia, there's, to my knowledge right now, a handful of mashgichim that, let's say in Asia, in China especially, you can't enter a building unless you have, there's a certain like green card almost that the government gives you a pass. We do have one mashgiach that has that. But, using that one mashgiach, most of the shluchim that live in China that do our work for us actually are waiting it out in Israel and the United States, whatnot. So there's this one guy out there who has that green card, and everyone's tapping on his shoulder to go to my place. But the good news is the CRC policy in general is that we don't give hashgacha, especially in China, unless it's what we call a group one. It's something that almost doesn't need hashgacha. It's very easy stuff. So, we're good with that.
So first of all, I guess, Shkoyach, and thank you, because I don't think I ever realized that there are mashgichim who are putting themselves out there to visit plants. Yes. That's a tremendous mysterious nefesh. So I think the realization, at least I was never aware of that, that we should, that they're like healthcare workers. They're going out there and putting themselves in harm's way and going to plants and exposing themselves. So that's a tremendous thank you to all of the RCs in the field who are out there. So thank you on behalf of all of us.
Thank you.
But maybe to allude to, you alluded to this, the issue of using technology. So what are some of the things that people are using? Maybe some things that people weren't necessarily aware of during regular times. And how do you use those now during these unusual times?
You know, I want to start off by saying this, there's always a bracha in everything that Kadosh Baruch gives us, even things like pandemics and changing up things. And we're beginning to see some, I'll call it benefits by some of the innovative things we're doing with technology that honestly, I think will keep going once we can even go back in. So of course what we're working on is with, there's Google Glass where the plant personnel walks around and there's a camera and the mashgiach, and maybe the RC, the rabbinic coordinator, that's what that word stands for. The mashgiach can be sitting in his home in Austin, Texas, the RC sitting in Chicago, and the plant personnel sitting on Lowville, Texas. And he's walking around, and all three of us are saying, okay, turn here, stop here, pick up the box, whether it's with the Zoom, with the Skype, the various things. Obviously, the older mashgiachim are having a hard time with all these things. They're still trying to fax, how do I press this? It's hilarious. And there's cute things like even something like we didn't anticipate when the plant personnel is turning this way, there's like almost motion sickness, but what we're noticing is that we can actually do visitations with a lot more people with expertise. Let's say we have an expert from our office who knows a lot about making a flavor. And then you have the mashgiach, and they can be in various places, but they're all doing the inspection at one time. That's a huge thing, and it's giving us insight into how the plant works, where I honestly think going forward, as I said, when we come back to regular visitations, maybe we should be doing this once a year where so many people are involved. And I want to tell you one other benefit we've seen, and this is subtle but really great. you know, when we walk around in a plant, so the Mashgiach walks around and he has his like clipboard or iPad or whatnot with all of the ingredients that are allowed. And the plant guy walks next to him and he stops the Mashgiach. He looks and the plant guy's kind of just escorting him to answer questions. But he's thinking about a million things. He's just waiting for the rabbi to finish and to kind of sign off and say, okay, everything's good today. All of a sudden, the plant guy is doing the inspection, helping us do the inspection. He's deep into understanding why we're asking something. Wait, stop there. But what about this? Now he's thinking. He's thinking kosher from a whole different perspective. It's open. He's involved now. And that actually is benefiting kosher on a much higher level because now he has to understand why we're stopping him and why this is opposed to him standing along. So to answer your question, technology, all of the stuff that, you know, you seem to be on the forefront here with YouTube and all that, but we're using all of those things where we're also tapping into, you know, signing into some of the computers from the companies, looking at the formulas. There's something called a where used, where an ingredient that might be sensitive, you can type in where is it used and all of your formulas, it pops up. Oh gosh, I think we're kosher and, you know, stuff like that. But the technology is already made for us. And, you know, there's no real chedushim. But the benefits that we're seeing from this, I think it's going to be long term, and I'm really excited about that.
It's amazing. You mentioned a minute ago the sensitive ingredients. Not everybody even realizes. Maybe give us an example of an ingredient that is a sensitive ingredient that nobody would ever imagine is a sensitive ingredient.
Right.
Because I think one of the things that I could say that since I've been in Chicago and been part of the Kollel and had the opportunity to work with you and Rabbi Cohen and everybody at the CRC is that my understanding of kashrus is revolutionized because you have opened my eyes to understanding the complexities. You know, when Rabbi Cohen usually comes before Pesach and gives the shiur to the Chavra Kollel about the different ingredients and where the origins of these ingredients may exist. And to me, it's been incredibly eye-opening to understand the world of kashrus and the behind the scenes. So maybe just take a moment for the people who aren't aware of what does it mean to have a sensitive ingredient that they didn't think of that as a sensitive right. ingredient.
So let me tell you two things on that. Number one is one of the most sensitive ingredients is something called glycerin. Okay, glycerin is a sweet fat, and you can either make it from a plant or you can make it from an animal. And the once you convert it to glycerin, which is in everything. Everything that is liquid and you want it to have a fatty sweet, like whether it's a medicine or it's a food or it's you're even making alcohol or, you know, gasoline somehow. It's like, it's amazing. It's not, we don't have enough time to go into glycerin, but glycerin made from tallow, which is animal fat. Once you convert it to glycerin, you can never really trace back the way the chemical's set up. It's a backward E for those that know chemistry. You can never trace back where it came from. So therefore, glycerin is a big thing, and especially when the market has the non-kosher glycerin, the animal-based glycerin, cheaper than vegetable, you always have to be aware of that. So let me just tell you what we've been finding incredibly. We've been walking into factories and companies that don't even use glycerin, okay? And we're finding non-kosher glycerin walking around and, you know, talking before about doing virtual visitations versus actual. So this happened recently. This Mashgiach, elderly, he couldn't go out. He's, you know, high risk. He's been doing virtual. And finally, the company needed a special run where he had to actually make the product kosher. As you know, Rabbi, that there's two types of certifications. There's the one that you're a shomer where you're watching to make sure everything is kosher. And then there's the one you're making kosher. Like cheese, you have to put in the rennet to make it kosher, or you have to crush the wine, or shechita, all of those things. So he had to go in and make something kosher. And he walks in, and he sees glycerin, non-kosher glycerin. He says, what is going on here? Now, until now, when he was doing virtually, he had not seen it, because he never even bothered to tell the plant guy, go over there and look for glycerin, because they never had. It turned out, and this we're seeing in many companies, companies now are making their own hand sanitizers for their personnel, which is much cheaper. Glycerin is a big part of hand sanitizer. And they're buying trefa glycerin to make hand sanitizer. They're making it on their kosher kalim, on their lines, And of course they didn't think to tell us or to tell the Ashkacha, because no, Rabbi, it's not going into food. They didn't think, oh my gosh, that's right, it makes them not. So that's something fascinating that came out through COVID. But let me just address your other point, and I don't know the time, so you'll have to tell me. I have a lot to say.
You're good, don't worry.
Okay, so this actually came to us pretty recently, where the FDA sent out the recommendations for labeling. And basically, and I have it in front of me, and I'll read you a couple words. As a result of COVID-19 pandemic, the food industry has informed us that there are supply disruptions and shortage of some ingredients. And basically, the FDA said, we're giving you a pass to switch around ingredients and not need to label it, because there's no way, there is a big shortage of ingredients, okay? So let's say one of the examples they give is that you're writing, you put in oat flour. You can't get oat flour. You can only get rice flour. Go ahead, said the FDA. And you don't even have to tell anybody. So this was like, whoa, okay? So in other words, of course we do our own hashgacha, but one of the things that help us, like Rav Moshe talks about not sahadi, but it's not halachic for real, is that the government's also making sure that they're very good with the label. So that helps our kosher program. So now that the government's saying, well, we're going to be very lax here, that's a game changer. So they gave lots of examples. And one of the things they say, listen, if it's more than 2%, you can't change it without putting a sticker on the label. But that doesn't help for kashrus, because shishim is 1.6, not 2%. Okay? But they go through a bunch of things over here. And you know, we've been reading this very carefully. What does this mean? Does this change everything we're doing? But you asked the question, tell me some ingredients. I'll give you one example they said, that a color. If you have a color and you switch it to another color, you're okay with that. Well, not in kashrus. Because let's say red color, you can have artificial red coloring, let's say in anything from a yogurt to an ISIS, to anything that's red color. But in kashrus, there's something called E120, okay? Red color E120, that comes from a bug. It's also known as carmine, but there's other words, there's other letters that you wouldn't even know as a consumer, even if I tell you, carmine is treif, and it really is treif. They extract it from a bug, and it's the best color out there, actually. And just as a side note, in Europe, they don't allow any fake coloring. They hold it's not healthy. So they only allow the natural coloring, which is either from a beet or from this carmine, from this conical beetle. So this is a huge problem when product is being made for Europe. But now, as an example, coloring, we have to be much more alert for these type, or let's say purple coloring, where it could come from grape skins, you know, stam yenum, as you know. So coloring would be a big example of something we're looking at, and that's obviously under 2%, and we're looking that carefully. I mean, the good news is that the government did say, let's say about the fats, because that's now that tray for fat is cheaper, the government did say to the companies, although we're giving you a pass on switching in and out of things, but if it changes the nature, if let's say, and they actually gave an example, if you've only been using vegetable fat and now you want to switch to a cheaper animal fat, that you need to put on the label as a sticker, because that actually changes the nature and the customer will be very upset about it. So that's one of many, many examples that we're dealing with now.
Amazing. I just want to thank you for enlightening us, because I think this is an entire universe that you're immersed in all the time, but the average consumer who just picks it off the shelf in the store somewhere doesn't necessarily appreciate or understand the complexity and right. Your ability to be on the front lines together. You know, for those who don't know, ACO, the Association of Kashrus Organizations that was founded by the CRC, the top five kashrus organizations, I assume that you're in touch all the time. You know, you're providing that level of essential service to our community. So thank you.
I want to tell you that we actually started an ACO Corona committee.
Really?
Where the heads of the organizations get together on the phone and talk about what's the latest effect that's happening because of Corona, and let's all agree to do the same type of thing. So let's say a company in China wants an initial inspection. I'll let you go after this. Sure. And they'll say, and we'll say, no, we don't do initials during Corona. We have to be in person. We can't do it virtually. Okay, I'll go to another agency. So if we're all agreeing that this is the right standard, it helps all of Koshitz and all of the consumers.
So thank you so much. Be well. Be gesund. Hope to see you again in person very soon. Amen. All the best. Thank you for the time. Okay, wonderful to have you, as always. Great to see you.
Same here.
Rabbi Shalom Fishbein, amazing, amazing resource here as part of our Chicago community. Thank you for the time. And we are now welcoming a special guest. Rabbi Crandall, can you hear me and see me? I can't hear you yet. One second, you got to tap the unmute. I don't know if I can unmute.
Okay, yeah.
Ah, now I hear you. Okay. Great. All right, Bruchim Abayim, welcome. Great to see you. How are things down in West Rogers Park? How's your family?
It's not so far from Skokie. Baruch Hashem, we're doing fine.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time. Rabbi Shlomo Crandall is the head of our Midwest branch, our Chicago branch of Chai Lifeline. And as I assume most people in this conversation are aware, Chai Lifeline provides crucial services to members of our community who are affected, Rachman al-Islam, by health challenges in a variety of ways. And it's an opportunity for us to hear from Rabbi Crandall about what Chai Lifeline is doing to support families who ordinarily would be facing challenges and now are facing, you know, a compounded challenge in a whole host of ways, and to be able to make us more sensitive and understanding what's going on out there. Usually one of the great, wonderful perks of the Kollel is this time of year in June. Baruch Hashem, we've been invited, thanks to one of our shared supporters and partners, both between Chai Lifeline and the Kollel. We come with Chai Lifeline usually right around this time. We go to a trip to an amusement park together with the Chai Lifeline families, which is amazing. And it's eye-opening, and it reminds us to open our hearts to those who don't have the bracha of health like the Rebbe has given so many of us. So, you know, something that I think about this time in specific, we're not going to have this trip this year, but maybe you can be mashlim that a little bit and share with us something, a perspective on what people are going through and how you're supporting them.
Sure. It's a fascinating time. It's one never really could imagine what like 4 months ago, what you know, we took a group of kids to Israel in January, and then we got back, and the world changed very, 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 very quickly. You're dealing with a group of children and families that are to begin with are sick and a sense of loneliness they feel. And as you so correctly said, their situation really got a lot worse very quickly. Although on a certain level, it's actually interesting, because one of the feelings that families have often when they have a very sick child is a sense of loneliness. And now all of a sudden, everyone's lonely. So when everyone's lonely together, there is a sense of now maybe you'll understand me. Now our slogan that we've been using is we're isolated together. We may be isolated, but we are together. In terms of what we're able to do, the mission hasn't changed. The mission of supporting families and children, siblings and parents hasn't changed. How we do it has most definitely changed. In terms of, you know, our inability, we're not allowed in the hospitals. You know, we can't go to the hospitals. Parents, you know, at times that parents aren't allowed to be with their children. We had recently a new diagnosis actually this past week, and the parents were not allowed to be with their son. Their son was a little bit older, you know, a little bit older, leave out the age exactly for now, but the parents weren't allowed to be with him. And that's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. Parents play a crucial role, you know, more than even Chai Lifeline advocates. Parents are advocates. So we're advocates as parents. And if the parents can't be there, it becomes very, very difficult. So we're trying to improvise, whether it's a Zoom programming as the Kollel is doing, or whether it's WhatsApp groups, whether it's, you know, back to, you know, the old good old telephone of talking to people and supporting them that way, whether it's social distancing, as it's a new word in the English language that we've all become very accustomed to. So new challenges, and we are attempting to stand up to them.
Yeah, what about, you know, the regular hamonam, us average Jews out there? What is it that we can do if we know of a family, or where can people get involved in a Chai Lifeline? What can people do during this time to assist in your effort to be machazik to families?
So it's interesting. Actually, people could actually get, on a certain level, more involved. It's easier to get more involved than before. We put out recently even something, you know, now school's coming to an end, but for the past few months, we've actually been looking for, you know, people to tutor kids over Zoom. Whereas before, you had to get into your car and you had to drive someplace and go someplace and sit down. Now, you know, over Zoom, in terms of you could let us know. We put out, you know, contact myself, contact Karen Beiter, who is in charge of our volunteers, and let us know. And let us know you're in geometry. Let us know that you want to teach someone a musical instrument. You know, whatever you could do. I won't lie. People are getting, I don't know if it's official word, but Zoom fatigued. I don't know if you're finding that as well. That just looking at a screen, we've been crying, no screens, no screens, and all of a sudden, screens. You know, let's do it. You know, we're dropping off. We need volunteers actually to drop things off at people's homes. You know, we have a big for Father's Day, we're dropping off for fathers, you know, fathers of children that are sick. For Mother's Day, we have drop offs. We have to drop off things at people's homes. You know, in different neighborhoods, whether it's in Long Grove, Illinois, whether it's in Skokie, whether it's downtown. I mean, last week, I had a situation where a volunteer went to Lurie, which normally takes, you know, they let us drive up. And if you've ever been to Lurie, you have to drive underneath where the emergency is. But we can't go into the building. If someone meets us down there, it takes 30 minutes, 40 minutes if there's traffic. With the road blockages because of the riots and the looting, it took a volunteer of ours an hour and a half, 2 hours just to get down there because the roadblock and things were stopped. So, you know, without the support of families in the community, it would be tough. It would be tougher to try to reach our families. Yeah. But a family actually coming from Eretz Yisrael now. It's who's actually here from Eretz Yisrael and here for a few months. And, you know, we're trying to support them. And that's where they're coming into, you know, like.
Yeah. So that's interesting in terms of thinking about people and what they can be doing to volunteer and to support. I wonder if that's an opportunity for families, you know, to think about volunteering, to drive and drop something off. People are looking for activities, you know, in our house. Even just to drive to Highland Park and do a family scavenger hunt, the middle seat versus the back seat is you know, a rainy day activity. So if somebody is reaching out to Karen and saying, you know, how can I deliver something? You could put the kids in the car, or you can go by yourself. For those who have kids at home, for those who are, you know, not at home currently, you can make that happen and enable.
We'd be happy to put you to work.
Oh, that sounds amazing. That's a fascinating thought. Anything, any important message that you think would be worthwhile for everybody to be aware of and to be sensitive to during this time that we should be opening our hearts to thinking about?
Listen, I think it's, you know, we're isolated together. The world is starting to open up. And, I wearing, you know, just the Chai Lifeline hat, and I'm glad you're drinking your coffee. But I was waiting for mine to be delivered this morning. I had to make my own, but okay. You know, one of the, you know, if you want to find a silver lining, if it's hard to find a silver lining, yeah, isolate it together. You know, Chai Lifeline, in my mind, is the epitome of what, you know, of the togetherness, of the achdus, of the shalom of Klal Yisrael. If we, what's my, really one of the things I'm most proud about Chai Lifeline is we bring the community together. Unfortunately, it comes together through sickness. And unfortunately, you know, people appreciate each other more during hard and difficult times. So my tefillah is that as we come out of hibernation, that we've all been experiencing somewhat, is that we say Shalom Aleichem to people that we wouldn't otherwise say Shalom Aleichem to. And we appreciate our neighbors that for whatever mishigas our neighbors have, and that we know that we're all in this together. So to me, that's the most important, if we're to always look for the look for that silver lining, if you like.
The great equalizer, like you said, in terms of health and then certainly broadly. So Halavai will be able to do that. Be well. Great to see you. Hopefully again in person very soon. And thank you for all that you're doing to support those members of our community who are in such need and giving us the opportunity. I hope we'll be able to connect again really soon. Thank you for the time. Great to have you.
Chazak v'matz, and thank you for your great work. Really appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure. Thank you for coming. And our last guest this morning is Rabbi Ilan Segelman. I don't know if we can see you yet. Let me see. Just joining us. Perfect. Yes. Shalom Aleichem. Good morning.
Hi. Shalom Aleichem. Can you see and hear me?
Yes, we got it. Perfect. Welcome to Chicago. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Rabbi Segelman is the American rabbinic personality to represent a really important organization for which the Jewish people as a whole, and I personally have great Hakar Satov, and that's called Machon Pua. Before I came to Chicago, I had the opportunity and the privilege, together with a small cohort of chaverim, of young rabbanim at Reitz and YU, to have our own personal course, a year-long course together with Machon Pua, under the direction of Rav Menachem Burstein Shlita and Rav Gidon Weitzman, and an incredible team of rabbinic and scientific personalities, medical personalities, who introduced us to the work of Machon Pua, which is mind-boggling. According to the statistics, I believe between 1 in 5 or 6 couples in the childbearing years struggles with an infertility challenge. And that means if you look around the average shul of young families, how many of the young couples in our community have some form of an infertility challenge, which is a silent makkah that oftentimes we don't think about or we're not sensitive to enough. And so that challenge is now being magnified due to the limitations of corona. And so the opportunity to open our hearts and to think about those families and what they're going through is so important. And to have Rabbi Segelman here to talk, just introduce to our community what it is that Machon Pua does and how it assists people in a myriad of ways, I think is very valuable for those of us in Chicago. I know that the opportunity that I had to interact with Machon Pua was absolutely mind-blowing, and we thank you for taking the time. So welcome, and maybe you can introduce just a little bit about what Machon Pua does for those who aren't familiar.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a real honor. Speaking of which, the course that you mentioned, I had the privilege to teach that course to the Kol Elyon this past year in YU. So Baruch Hashem, and there was a bechina at the end, a test at the end for everyone who completed the coursework. They got, you know, a certificate from Machon Pua and YU. The organization, as you mentioned before, really strives to help all those couples, and the truth is singles as well, with fertility preservation, as there are many older singles who are unfortunately not married, and fertility is an issue. So really the whole Jewish community with this issue of infertility. Let's just, as a basic overview of the organization, we have three basic missions that we strive for on a daily basis. We supply and provide supervision in the labs, which is really how Machon Pua began 30 years ago in Israel, where basically, just to cut it, well, just to be as brief and concise as possible, but the fertility process should have some type of halachic accompaniment. And Machon Pua, from A to Z, is there to help you navigate all of the challenges that could come up with the friction between medicine, fertility, reproductive medicine, and halacha. You know, we're really there to hold your hand through the entire process. In addition to the supervision, we do education, which has been really, really important right now during coronavirus. The educational piece, the information, the education, just the conversation between ourselves and the Jewish community is so important, especially at a time when people are at a loss. They don't know where to turn. They don't know what's safe, what's not safe. They don't know what's accepted, what's not acceptable. Through the emotional challenges, the halachic challenges, the medical challenges, as well as our third mission is that of guidance and support, making sure that everyone has a resource that they can turn to, a halachic resource, an emotional resource, from A to Z, really, to make sure that the journey, as challenging as it is, can be as successful as possible.
Well, thank you for giving that overview. In terms of how it relates to Corona right now, so obviously, I remember I have been in some of those labs, the little hashkacha, plumba type of things, seeing those, you know, for myself, and what that means and the significance of that. What has Corona done to affect couples who are dealing with fertility challenges? What do you see as the unique challenges that are compounded now?
Yeah. Let me take a step back, and you know, we'll make it more inclusive. When Corona first hit, so there were a lot of questions that people were asking Machon Pua. The phones were off the hook. Some of the questions were from the perspective of infertility, and some was from the perspective of Taras Mishpacha, of Nida questions, family purity. For instance, I think the number one question was the mikvah questions, the safety of the mikvah. And we were getting questions from all across the world about the safety of mikvahs, which obviously was really community oriented. Each rav and each mikvah lady and the rabbanim of each community dealt with the protocols and the safety of their own mikvah. But we were getting questions from women who were significantly immunocompromised, some cancer patients and whatnot. And they really had questions of how to navigate, medically speaking, their mikvah attendance. So together with rabbanim and with mikvah ladies, we were able to establish policies. Weddings were being pushed up. A tremendous amount of weddings were being scheduled with moments notice. And all of the questions with Hilchos Nida, usually the kala doesn't prepare for a wedding, 7 days in advance. And here we were scheduling weddings for the following week or sometimes later in the week and navigating the complicated, sophisticated questions of Nida that don't typically come up on a day-to-day, year-to-year basis. And then when we enter the world of fertility and infertility, there were questions of people. People had all different types of emotions, mixed emotions. People were unsure whether they wanted to get pregnant at this point because of the fear and the risks of coronavirus. And people were at the other end of the spectrum. They were upset that they were told that they weren't able to continue with their treatments. Right when everything hit, across the country, fertility centers closed. And it was devastating for people in the middle of their cycles or people who were anticipating beginning a cycle, especially if they wanted to get something in right before Pesach. And then they were told they're going to have to put all treatment on a pause for 1 month, 2 months. And at that point, doctors didn't even know when they would be able to resume treatment. So it was really, really devastating. The calls that we were getting from women, from couples, from men as well, it's a devastating experience. What are we supposed to do with this pause that may be this indefinite pause? We don't know when these restrictions are going to be lifted. It was a very, very hard time emotionally for people, as well as physically and medically. People really had, even the doctors didn't have any answers, whether there's a risk to pregnancy, whether there's no risk, whether it's healthy and safe to resume treatment or whether it's unsafe. It was a really complicated time with a lot of unknowns, a lot of question marks. And we were just doing our best to send out short videos of encouragement and chizuk And our lines are, you know, our hotlines were always open. We upped our hours, actually. You know, some people were firing staff, unfortunately, letting people go. We were hiring more and more people to see how we could reach the masses from a social media perspective, the virtual platforms. We were doing really everything that we could to calm people's nerves and to hope to be there in any way that we could.
It's amazing. You're talking now about, you know, the medical challenges. Do you get the sense that things are starting to open up more? Is that back on track in terms of reproductive endocrinology? Are the offices opening up? Are people getting the help that they need?
Absolutely. Right now, at least I can say in New York, in Los Angeles, the doctors are still doing some Zoom sessions, telehealth sessions when possible. A lot of the blood work and monitoring, the ultrasounds, have to be done in person. So they haven't figured out the technology to do a Zoom ultrasound yet. But up until that point, people are still going into the office, and a lot of treatment has resumed. Even what we would call real elective things, which are not people. That was the controversy in and of itself when they initially called fertility something that was elective, and the emotional response to such a statement that my family is elective. You don't think that my family is something which is essential. But it was very difficult for people. And, you know, luckily that changed shortly after it began. But for the most part, people really have, right now, people have resumed treatment. For the most part, life is going back to normal, Baruch Hashem.
It's amazing. It's actually an opportunity for me to the first point that you made now, to talk about a hotline, which is that Baruch Hashem, the Kolol, through our Neely effort, I know that you had a chance to connect with some of the resources that we have here. Here in Chicago, several years ago, we started a local hotline for local women in Chicago to connect with local Kolol teachers who can provide support, education, and also answer questions based on forwarding those questions to local Rabbanim. So the local women have been a resource here. Our Kolol teachers, you see on the screen, for those who are looking at the share screen, they can click in to submit it on this web form, or they can call or text this phone number or email the hotline. They've been working with women locally to support them in that same issue of, you know, how to deal with going to the mikvah, just being there to support people, answer their questions, some of the questions about, you know, timing for mikvah, all these kinds of things. We've been seeing those a lot here as well. And it's great that the Kolol teachers have been able to facilitate that. I know that they've been in touch with you, and it's just such an important time to be mechazik people, because people in this context are feeling very vulnerable, whether it's infertility or, like you said, just in general, as it relates to mikvah, how sensitive this topic is.
Yeah, especially this past week, we aired a webinar on this past Tuesday night about mikvah. And Tuesday night, at least in New York, was when they began, I think Tuesday night or Wednesday night, we began this curfew that started at 8 o'clock. And my wife, who moderated the event, she commented that everything that these women are going through, their nerves, the anxiety, the fear of going to mikvah when we're amidst this pandemic, and now the governor, you know, and the local officials are putting these statements out that it's okay, you know, although there's a curfew, but for minyan and for mikvah, we're going to make an exception. But can you just picture the anxiety that a woman is getting into her car after the curfew has begun, because it's officially unsafe, and now she has to, although it's unsafe, drive to the mikvah to experience something that she's uncomfortable to begin with. The anxiety and the pressure that people are facing now is unbelievably difficult and unprecedented. And the fact that there are resources in the community available to help these women, to help couples, to help the community as a whole, it's a very, very, very important important role that you play. And it was really a pleasure to talk to the Neely representatives, because the more partnerships, the more opportunities, the more relationships, and the more we can help the Jewish community is such a zchus. It's a tremendous honor, at least for me and for you and for the entire leadership of the Jewish community as a whole. And I think that I think that when you consider what the world has gone through, and not speaking myself, but in general, the Jewish leadership, whatever form that takes, whatever flavor and anything, the Jewish leadership has stepped up to help the community in every area, whether it was before Pesach, preparing for Pesach, and the mikvah, and all different areas of life. I think we deserve a pat on the back. I mean, the Jewish community deserves you, especially all the things, the special work that you're doing in Chicago deserves a pat on the back, because I think it brought out tremendous unity amongst the leadership and tremendous chizuk amongst the community as a whole. We're in this together, and we're here to help. And the entire community should seek out those resources, because Baruch Hashem, there are many resources available.
Yeah, so thank you. Very kind words. But that point at the end of how we're in it together, one of the things that we focus on is our Kollel is a local resource, and we're balancing and trying to be able to serve our community by connecting with the broader community. So just this conversation, you know, this morning, having people here in Chicago who are serving our community, but even people beyond, yourself and Rabbi Willig Shlita and so many others, that's part of what this has brought out, like you said, in terms of the best opportunities that we've had to be local, but at the same time, benefit from the national, international resources. So maybe just in closing, if people want to reach out and need that chizuk from Machon Pua, where are they going to find it? Where should they go?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. So we have our website, www.puahfertility.org, P-U-A-H, fertility.org. That's all the information is there. You can also send any questions. There's an Ask the Rabbi tab there. There's a tab for it to set up a free consultation where we can talk about the emotional, the halachic, the medical questions that people are asking, or to a confidential email address, questions@puafertility.org, questions with an S at the end, @puafertility.org. Everything is done, as I said, confidentially and professionally. And Baruch Hashem, we've had tremendous success being able to connect. And I get such pleasure seeing the scope, in terms of the scope of the questions, how sophisticated and how unbelievable the questions are, and from all over the world, you know, from Germany, from Russia, from the Philippines, from Mexico, from the whole, you know, it's just incredible, and England, and it's incredible. And this, you know, just the fact that we're talking together, and people are signing in from all over the world, is a lesson that we've learned, the achdus that the Zoom can facilitate, right, and the limud haTorah and the chizuk and the inspiration that Zoom has facilitated is just really mind-boggling and unbelievable.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. Thank you for being a resource for the Jewish people worldwide, and thank you for working with our college teachers to continue to foster the support of the community. Please send my regards to Rav Menachem Shlita when you speak to him, well, Rabbi Weitzman. Tell them we're thinking of them in Chicago. Look forward to staying in touch. Shavua Tov, be well.
All the best. Thank you so much. Looking forward to being in touch.
Me too. Thank you so much. And thank you to everybody for joining us this morning. Incredible opportunity to welcome all our special guests and to continue to grow during this unusual time, to listen to Rabbi Willig and hear how someone takes the responsibility for Klal Yisrael so seriously on their shoulders and answering the questions and giving us guidance out here in Chicago from a world perspective to understand what our Chicago Rabbinical Council is providing in terms of kashrus and what that supervision means to us as consumers, to open our hearts and realize there are opportunities to help people in our community through Chai Lifeline, and to think about from the perspective of a couple standpoint and infertility, but mikvah in general, to create that sensitivity, to realize the resource that Makom Pua has, and as well as our own college teacher resource that we have here in Chicago. We thank you all for listening. We invite you to continue to join us with the Kollel. Last week, we had an incredible evening through the doctor's lens with Rabbi Dr. Eddie. Last week was Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glass, and this Thursday night, please God, with Rabbi Dr. Eddie Reichman. It's going to be a continued challenge to deal with the limitations that we have, but thank God, through the technology, as was mentioned, and the other means, we're going to continue to serve our community. And please God, we'll have the opportunity to connect with each other, to continue to grow in our learning and our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So thank you so much. For those who are looking for the Taras HaMishpacha resource, it's now on your screen. Wish everyone Shavua Tov. Have a great week. Take care. Look forward to seeing you, please God, next week. Bye-bye.